weather anywhere in the UK. Only 9 degrees in Lerwick, but a high of 14 expected in Glasgow. And very briefly, on the end of the week, so Friday, eastern Britain will be cold and rainy, whereas the west will be bright, warm and sunny. That's the weather. David.
Many thanks, Thomas. Now on BBC Radio 4, Book of the Week. The Land Where Lemons Grow by Helena Attlee is a celebration of the Italian love affair with citrus fruit. Today the author goes in search of the elusive Lake Garda lemon. The reader is Francesca Diamond.
These days, citrus is produced on a commercial scale only in Sicily and southern Italy. But over the centuries, it has made an impact on a very much wider area of the country. On an evening in Genoa, capital of Liguria, I stumbled across a metaphor for the broad geographic span of citrus in Italy. It was November, and yet the climate on the coast is so mild that this region of northwest Italy was once as important as the south for citrus production. The prostitutes hovering in the narrow streets near the port were wearing shorts, and almost all the tables outside bars and restaurants were taken. I found a seat overlooking the old docks and ordered a Campari and orange. The waiter looked bemused, and I felt the need to justify myself, explaining I'd often drunk Campari like that and thought fresh orange juice and ice its ideal companions in a glass. His face lit up, and he said, "Ah, we call that a Garibaldi." I could see the barman mixing my drink. It was a slapdash affair, a question of two Sicilian blood orange halves squeezed messily into a tall glass. He filled the remaining space with Campari, a fistful of ice and a twist of orange peel cut as long and fine as a shoelace. When the waiter returned with my scarlet drink, it was suddenly obvious that its name, Garibaldi, came from the colour of the shirts worn by the Camicie Rosse, soldiers in Garibaldi's army of 1,000 volunteers. While Garibaldi was fighting to make Sicily and its blood orange groves part of the new kingdom of Italy, Gaspare Campari was in the northern Italian region of Lombardy, developing a recipe for the aperitif that would take his name. Lombardy includes the western shore of Lake Garda, and despite its latitude, it was once the centre of a thriving citrus industry, producing lemons that were exported all over northern Europe. About halfway between Venice and Milan, Lake Garda is surrounded by the snowy peaks of the pre-Alps. Lemons grown in these cooler climates are particularly bitter, a characteristic that made them popular in northern Europe, but to cultivate such a high-risk crop in the challenging conditions of northern Italy demanded a degree of dogged madness. Every decade or so, the nighttime temperature would plummet, sometimes dipping as low as -8 degrees Celsius, and then the citrus crop and even the trees themselves would be in grave danger. You might think this is a good enough reason to abandon any plans for growing citrus on a grand scale, but at the end of the 18th century, the Bettoni, who still own a lovely villa on the water's edge, began to build the first of the extraordinary lemon houses that soon covered the sloping landscape between Garignano and the small town of Limone. Each one consists of several deep terraces linked by stone steps and lined with square pillars nearly 10 metres high. Large chestnut rafters run between the tops of the pillars, and in winter they are used to support wide planks that create a sheltering roof for the trees. Smaller beams are attached horizontally to support narrower planks for the walls, glass panels and doors. All of these panels and roofing planks are removed and stored during summer, allowing the trees to grow in the open air, sheltered only by the thick walls that surround the garden on three sides, leaving it open east-southeast. You might suppose that the small town of Limone was named for the fruit that grew all around the village, and yet lemons were not cultivated there on a grand scale before the 18th century, and the name actually derives from the Latin word limen, meaning border or boundary, a reference to its position close to the frontier of Roman rule. It's easy to drive up the west shore of the lake today, but when the Bettoni wanted to build their first lemon houses, there was no road, and all of the materials had to be loaded onto boats and carried by water. Until then, the inhabitants of Limone had scratched a living from fishing in the lake and growing olives, but now there were jobs to be had as manual labourers, builders, carpenters, and lemon gardeners. All this activity attracted attention outside the village, and soon entire families began to migrate to Limone in search of work. The Bettoni were in business, but they didn't want their family name sullied by vulgar associations, and so they called their company Bentotti, which won't have fooled anyone. An archive containing diaries, account books and letters is still housed in their lovely villa at Bogliaccio. Most of the letters were received in the mid-19th century from customers in Prague, Krakow, Vienna, Warsaw, Constance, Lviv, Trieste and Milan, places where the exceptionally bitter juice and aromatic peel of the Garda lemons were especially appreciated. Bentotti's northern European customers would pay two or three times as much for Garda lemons as they would for the less acidic varieties of lemon grown in Sicily or Calabria. Other villages on the western shore of the lake soon joined in the lucrative trade. All of them had a geographical advantage over lemon producers in the south of Italy because the journey from the lake to the shops of northern Europe was much shorter, and consequently their lemons were bound to arrive at their destination in better condition. The finest fruit was destined for Hungary, Poland and Russia. It was carefully wrapped by a woman-only team and packed in heavy-duty wooden cases. Protected in this way, the lemons would last for up to 6 months. Fruit of an inferior quality was sent in lightweight boxes and without wrappers to Milan, Verona, Brescia, Parma and Modena. Only the poorest fruit was retained for local consumption. Domenico Fava, a local man whose ancestors came to Limone to work for the Bettoni, has spent 30 years accumulating information about Limone's lemon industry. He led me through the pretty, tourist-clogged streets and paused beside a high wall. There were two small holes at head height, and when I put my eye to one of them, I found I was looking into a lemon house. The wall was enormously high, and because of the hole through it, I could see it was about half a metre thick. Inside was a sunny, sheltered space enclosed on three sides. The high back wall protected it from cold wind off the mountains, and its south side was open to the lake. Domenico explained that the hole in the wall would originally have been made to accommodate a vine. It was common to plant other crops like grapes, capers, or different kinds of citrus fruits on the warm south walls of a lemon house, but vines were trained through the wall to grow outside the house so they didn't shade the trees. Both vines and trees were long gone, and the garden contained nothing but grass and pillars that strode across my view of the lake. We saw numerous other lemon houses as we walked through Limone, their pillars standing about the town like the skeletons of gigantic, prehistoric beasts, bleached bones stark against the dark backdrop of the mountains. Either they lay empty, or they had been converted into swimming pools, built into the structure of hotels, or made into houses. During the First World War, everyone living on the shores of Lake Garda was forced to abandon their lemon gardens and evacuate the area. And to make matters worse, much of the wood normally used for enclosing the lemon houses was requisitioned for use as shuttering in the trenches on the front line. As a result, after the war, many lemon gardeners were forced to leave their trees unprotected, and they lost most of them during the exceptionally cold winter of 1928. In 1932, any surviving lemon growers were given fresh hope when the new Gardasena road was built along the west shore of the lake, linking Limone for the first time to Garniano. This brought tourists to Limone, and photographs taken between the 1930s and 1960 show them buying lemons from colourful roadside stalls. But the tourist trade wasn't lucrative enough to keep such a labour-intensive system of lemon production alive, and the last few lemon gardens were eventually abandoned. Now, however, In Garniano, there is a citrus grove in perfect working order. It belongs to Giuseppe Gandossi, who bought it 40 years ago. It was the house that he and his wife fell for, but it just happened to have an abandoned lemon garden attached to it. It was in Gandossi's garden that I saw a genuine Garda lemon for the first time. It wasn't much to look at. Small, smooth-skinned and perfectly oval. But after I got home, I squeezed its juice over a plate of insipid risotto, and the transformation was instant. It lifted and strengthened the flavours, creating impact in a vacuum. It had the unique and scented bitterness of the Garda lemon, and as Gandossi said, no one likes a sour orange, but in a lemon, bitterness is prized. I clambered all over the lemon house with Gandossi. He showed me the irrigation channels that carry water along the back walls of the terraces, took me into the storerooms at the end of each terrace where the bleached boards and glazed panels that clothed the structure in winter were stacked, and into his workshop. Gandossi cultivates his trees in a strictly traditional manner, employing tools and utensils used for hundreds of years in these parts. You can only find these things in museums today, so if he wanted any himself, he had to make them. In the workshop, he showed me the leather buckets made from donkey skin that were always used by lemon pickers. And then there were the buckets full of wooden nails for securing the roofing planks in winter, which he whittled in the evenings after work. It has always been traditional to keep citrus undercover, da Santa Caterina a Santa Caterina, from one St. Catherine's Day to the next. This means that the trees still come in from the garden on the 25th of November, which is the saint's day of St. Catherine of Alexandria, and go out again on St. Catherine of Siena's day, 30th of April. It used to take Gandossi a fortnight of perilous hard labour to shift all the cladding out of the storerooms, to scramble across the skeleton of pine rafters and put the roofing planks in place, to secure them with his handmade wooden nails and shutter the sides of the terraces with boards and glazed panels. Now he's a little older. His son helps him out. But the winter work doesn't end there, because each crack in this vast, temporary structure must be stuffed with dried grass to insulate it against drafts. And once all that work is done, Gandossi still has to stay on red alert in case of frost. Traditionally, the lemon gardeners kept a bowl of water on their bedroom windowsills. On cold nights, they would feel its consistency with their fingertips. Any hint of thickening or freezing would send them into a frenzy of activity, because fires had to be lit at the end of each terrace and tended throughout the night to warm the air and prevent the frost destroying the fruit and trees. In the 19th century, this crude and rather hazardous system was replaced by stoves and heating pipes. We ended up at roof level on the top terrace, where, when I could tear my eyes away from the enormous drop beneath our feet, I began to grasp the labour involved in cladding that vast structure with boards and panels every autumn, and to understand the dogged madness required to grow lemons at 46 degrees north.
Francesca Diamond was reading The Land Where Lemons Grow by Helena Attlee. It was abridged by Lawrence Waring and produced by Kirstine Cameron. Tomorrow, the Battle of the Oranges, a messy carnival tradition in the northern Italian town of Ivrea. Now, the crew is in the sounds which are wafting your way. We're going sailing by towards the shipping forecast. Thank you. And now, with the time at 12 minutes to 1, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Thursday, the 24th of April. The general synopsis at 1800, high Baltic 1037, slow moving, declining 1031 by 1800 today. New low moving slowly northeastwards, expected Shannon 1010 by the same time. Low just west of Shannon 1005, losing its identity. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Southwest Viking, southeasterly 5 to 7, occasional rain, good, occasionally poor. Northeast Viking, north at Cirra, southeasterly 4 or 5, becoming variable 3 or 4 later, showers, good, occasionally poor.